Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking to Rob DeWalt, speaking of the arts, and we're going to be speaking a little bit about the new theater production of the play In the Next Room. Right now, I would like to welcome Linda Siegel with today's legislative update. Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor Charlotte.
Good morning. So the immigrants' driver's license issue was dead in the water, had been killed in committee, in a lot of committees. And what happened? Now it's being voted on?
Well, something happened yesterday that in my many years up here I'd never seen before. There's a process where if a bill goes to a committee and it's tabled, then the bill is dead and it just stays there in that committee. But there is an opportunity to pull that bill, we call it blasting that bill out of the committee. And that's what happened yesterday on the floor of the House, where there was about a 7-hour debate. And
about the process or about the bill?
Well, about both. Actually, it was never really on the content of the bill. It was about the process. So Representative Andy Nunez from Doña Ana County, it was his bill, and it had been tabled in the House Consumer and Public Affairs Committee. And, of course, the governor has been really pressuring this to repeal the immigrant driver's license. There are several bills out there. And so he made a motion to pull it out of committee and bring it to the floor.
But how can you do that? I thought the whole process of going through committee was the legislative process of our state.
Well, that is the legislative process, but if you can get the votes, you can pull it out of the committee. So the debate raged on. In the House, you have a debate limit of 3 hours. But the reason it went longer is they divided the questions, and so you can debate 3 hours on each of the issues. And ultimately what happened is that they pulled the bill out of committee, and it is number one on today's calendar for a full House floor debate on this bill. And what will probably happen, as indicated by the vote to pull it out of committee, it will probably pass. And then the bill will go over to the Senate.
And in the Senate, has it also gone through committees, or has to start the process from scratch?
Well, it'd have to start with the first committee process in the Senate.
Do they have a process there where if it dies in committee, they can also resurrect it?
Yes, yes.
In fact, very odd.
The Senate has been more inclined to, quote, blast bills out of committees than the House has, although over the last few years, the Senate really hasn't done that. But this has ramifications for lots of other bills. There are anti-abortion bills tabled in committees. There are the same-sex marriage ban bills tabled in committees. There are what environmentalists consider bad environmental bills tabled in committees. And if the House and the Senate start blasting all those bills out, not following the committee process, then there are going to be a lot of brutal and long debates on the floor of the House.
In the next 2 weeks.
In the next 15 days that we have left, and we don't even have a budget yet.
Oh, my goodness. It's interesting because this has been, up until now, as you've described it, I haven't been down to the roundhouse much, but kind of a slow and sleepy session compared to past sessions. Not as many bills, not as much activity, the legislature closing on Fridays. Now suddenly,
yes,
it's
heated
a crazy,
up for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and the partisan politics have emerged in the legislature itself. It's been more the governor talking about the Democratic legislators, and now the partisanship in the legislatures, particularly in the House, has fully erupted.
I thought she promised to be bipartisan with the day that she gave the State of the State address.
Well,
not so, huh?
Well, apparently there's a lot of activity in campaign mode. So
right.
They had a basketball game last night, the House versus the Senate, which I'm sure was very interesting, since there were a lot of dissension and fighting on the floor of the House, and then the Republican and Democrat House members go to play basketball against the Senate members.
Can we see that on the web?
I don't know.
Linda Siegel.
It's not a pretty sight, I'm sure.
Can we, let's talk about the budget. That is the big issue and the big question this session.
Right, that's the big issue every session. And usually the budget goes along, and by the middle of whether it's the 60-day session or the 30-day session, by the middle, the budget has usually passed from the House, where it generally originates, and gone over to the Senate. Well, the House actually could not get a deal on the budget till just a couple of days ago, and so the House Bill 2, the budget, is just now reaching the Senate Finance Committee, and they started hearing it yesterday, where they get to look at it and say, okay, well, we like what the House did here, we don't like this, we're going to take this out, we're going to put more money in. The senators have an opportunity to develop their own amendments to put into House Bill 2, and they have until Saturday to get those amendments in, and then they will...
Like tomorrow, Saturday?
Tomorrow, Saturday, and then the Senate Finance Committee will vote on its version of the budget, which will then, when it passes, go to the Senate floor, where they will vote on it. If it's different than the House version, it's got to go back to the House. And of course, we know it will be different. They will have other priorities. The chair of the Senate Finance Committee thinks that there's not enough money in the budget, so they may be cutting things out. And then when it goes back to the House will have to agree with the Senate or not agree. And if they don't agree, then a conference committee is created with several people from both chambers, and they try to reach a compromise. Well, 15 days left. That's going to be
some late
tight
nights.
Yeah.
I had Senator Peter Wirth from Santa Fe District 25 on the air the other day, and he was saying that he'd introduced a bill that would lower slightly corporate taxes in New Mexico, but close the loopholes that allow out-of-state companies not to pay taxes. Does that have a chance? Is that part of the whole budget process?
No, it doesn't really have a chance. There's of course, the governor has said no new taxes, and even though many of us see that as a tax equity, Republicans and the governor pretty much see it, and some Democrats too, I imagine, see it as an increase in taxes.
Okay, so no possible revenue enhancements of any kind for the New Mexico budget.
None whatsoever, except the partial reduction of the film tax credit. I mean, that was what was holding up the budget in House appropriations and in the House. And when they finally got the deal to cap the film tax credit at $45 million a year, that's when the budget moved. So we were able to raise the taxes on the film industry, but no one else.
Right.
And of course, there are over $1 billion of tax credits and tax loopholes in the state of New Mexico. And we could have looked at some of those, too,
right,
not just picking on the film industry.
Right, which was on the chopping block from day one. And that day I looked at the Santa Fe New Mexican, and the front page of the paper compared the tax credits for the film industry to those of the oil and gas industries.
Uh-huh.
And they were way higher.
Yes.
In the oil and gas.
Well,
those haven't been touched.
No. And of course, oil and gas is a huge revenue generator in the state, but I'm sure there's some room to reduce some of those credits. And then there are hundreds of other credits, which are probably outdated, and we need to look at those.
Right.
We need to generate some more revenue, obviously.
Ethics.
Well, you know, it's so interesting, because every time there's a governor's race, the governor runs on ethics, and even Governor Richardson, who ended up having some issues. But it's such a popular thing to talk about. And so we have about 40 different ethics bills introduced in this session, many the same that we've introduced in the past, like trying to create an ethics commission for legislators. So if there's a violation, if someone perceives there's a violation, they can take it to this ethics commission. There are no corporate campaign contributions. Those are often considered ethics. School boards, a bill to have school boards do campaign reporting, which school board members and like community college members like myself, we don't have to report our campaign contributions. Disclosures by state contractors. I mean, there are all kinds of ethics bills. And the problem is, not one of them has gone very far. They might have passed one committee, and I see today in the Senate Rules Committee that several of those ethics bills are on in that committee, but nothing has really moved. And I just point this out because we talk a lot about it, but yet there doesn't seem to be any pressure, but even by the public, to make these kinds of things happen.
Well, another issue that I heard the other day on KSFR News was a transparency issue. So there is, and this isn't a legislative thing, but there's a small business task force. Somebody tried to look into who's on it and what are they doing, and they had to file a Freedom of Information Act or something like that. I mean, it was absolutely non-transparent, completely closed to the public. And then when she finally found out who was on it, there wasn't a single small business on the thing. It was all construction, mining.
And it was called the Small Business
Oil and Gas
Task Force.
And their only agenda was to get rid of environmental regulation.
Uh-huh. So much for transparency.
So much for transparency. All right. Healthcare.
Well, I just thought we've talked a lot about the exchange bills, the health insurance exchange bills, and
which we are mandated to come up with
by
law.
Right, we're supposed to have something in place, some kind of health insurance exchange in place by 2013, January 1st, 2013, and those bills are moving through the process. But there are some other bills that are kind of interesting that don't make the news and really don't get a lot of discussion. There was a bill that was actually tabled in a committee earlier in the week that would have prevented school-based health clinics from giving out information about reproductive health, about STDs, anything about it, as well as not being able to give out condoms or birth control pills, any of that.
Yeah, because teenagers don't have sex.
Definitely. Oh, no. And that bill got tabled, so who knows, maybe that'll be a bill that'll get blasted out. Another bill, which hasn't gotten much public attention, is we have a lot of what we call scope of practice battles in the legislature, where different practice groups, like advanced practice nurses or optometrists, or in this instance, chiropractors, want to expand their ability to do other things for which they are trained. And they have a bill this session to, if they go back to school for a 2-year period and do clinicals, that they would be able to prescribe certain drugs related to primary care and sort of expand their practice beyond what they're perceived to do, which is make adjustments. They would be able to act as primary care providers. And as you can imagine, that's quite controversial with a lot of physicians who don't want to see that happen.
Right.
Another bill, which is really important to providers and to the citizens of New Mexico, is the Medical Malpractice Act. And we've had a situation here in New Mexico for about, since the 70s, where we've put a cap on the liability that healthcare providers, primarily physicians, have to keep their premiums low, to keep their malpractice premiums low. And it's in the last couple of years become a disagreement between the trial lawyers, who would like to see that cap raised to meet inflation, and the physicians, who say, well, if you raise that cap, you know, we're not going to be able to afford malpractice insurance. And so, you know, for the last few years, that's come up and really not gotten anywhere, because pretty much the trial lawyers have more political power and have been able to keep that shut down. So bills like that, which we really don't read about in the newspaper or even hear on the news, are happening. There's a bill to require insurance companies to pay for oral chemotherapy drugs. And that's really an important bill, because oftentimes it's hard to go into the provider's office and get those IV chemotherapy drugs, and this would help people be able to take these drugs at home. But the problem is it costs the insurance companies more to give people oral chemotherapy, and so they don't always want to pay for it.
This leads to another question, which, again, we've talked about on this program, and we're going to be talking on Monday to Senator Jerry Ortiz Pino, who is introducing a resolution that would put on the New Mexico Constitution an amendment to be voted on by voters of whether health care is a human right.
Uh-huh, yes. I've sat in one of the hearings for that bill.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about that on, I think most or all of Monday's show will be devoted to that. But the whole question of whether our health care should be decided by insurance companies or by our physicians
right.
is up again.
Right, and other health care providers. Yep.
Okay. What else?
Well, you may remember we talked about on the show before the legislature even started about this restructuring task force. So from June until December, there was a task force that had members of the legislature as well as citizen members, and they spent 3 or 4 days every month looking at different aspects of government. Can we cut this department out? Can we merge this department? Can we eliminate certain boards and commissions? What can we do to reorganize, restructure government, and try to make it more efficient and work better?
And one of the things that you said about that, or that we talked about that, is that some of those are symbolic and most of them wouldn't actually save significant amounts of money.
Right. And they actually came to that conclusion that if we merge two huge departments like the Human Services Department and the Department of Health, we really weren't going to save much money in staffing because, okay, you can have one secretary of the department, but you still have to have all the other staff there. So they came to realize that, but they still produced a number of bills that were introduced in this legislative session, combining some agencies, eliminating boards, and unfortunately, none of them have gone very far either in the legislative process. So we spent a lot of time, a lot of money looking at this, and yet we haven't been able to really do anything with it yet, and we only have 15 days left, so we'll see.
So has there been any, besides cutting the film business, which many, I think because I'm in Santa Fe, but I know a lot of people who actually make their living on the film business, and so they're very worried about it. Besides cutting the film business, is there anything that you've seen that looks like a rational, intelligent, and creative way of looking at the budget and redoing things, besides just kind of across-the-board cuts?
It's pretty much been business as usual in doing across-the-board cuts. We haven't really analyzed any specific programs and said, well, this one isn't really working anymore, let's get rid of it. It's just kind of been our typical approach, which is across the board and kind of like we're doing in the federal government, just cutting.
Right. And, okay, well, Linda Siegel is with us every Friday. You'll be here for the next 2 Fridays with the legislative update. Thanks for being with us.
All right, Mayor Charlotte, thank you.
We're going to take a little break right now. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned. And we are back talking about the play, which opens tonight. It's called In the Next Room, or The Vibrator Play. And sitting here at the table with me are director Nicholas Sabato, Sean Wayne King, and Megan Burns, who are two of the actors in the play. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning.
So this is a crazy play. I've never quite seen anything like it, but it's based on a historical reality from what, about 100 years ago?
1880 was actually the year that the play is set.
Okay, more than 100 years ago, about the idea that the newly invented device known today as a vibrator could cure people of hysteria.
Absolutely. So the play is based on these historical facts that the doctors of that time used this machine, and it was at the dawn of electricity in our society, to cure hysteria in women and some men. The idea was that it would release the fluids in the womb to help to clear the mind and relax the patient so that they would release them of this hysteria. And they believed that it truly worked.
And so there's something about the play, well, something about the idea which is farcical, and the play is written and performed as a farce, that a doctor, played by you, Sean, does this essentially with a straight face and with the facade of science, that he's basically allowing women to have a sexual experience in his examination room.
And I don't play it as if that's what they're having. I play they're having a release of the fluid. They're having a release from the hysteria. So their emotions were. I don't play it. Yeah, I play it straight.
Right, but the idea that the doctor wouldn't know that was going on seems entirely absurd.
Because the doctor he's all scientific. It's all about the actual medicine of it, not the emotional side of it.
And so,
which is what his wife experiences, more or less through the play.
And that Megan is you. You play the wife. What's your character at the beginning? Wonders what is going on in the other room. Wonders what the doctor is doing. Female patients go in all tied up in knots and come out with roses in their cheeks.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, my character. Is having challenges of her own in her own life, and then she's sort of seen these people, come in and out and looking much relieved after interacting with my husband. And I'm hearing these noises coming from the other room, and I can, hear the instrument, and I don't know what it is. I've never been in that room, so I just get more and more curious, and drama ensues.
So there are undertones of all kinds of emotional relationships, lesbian connections, and so on. It's a play, contemporary play, set in the late 19th century. How do you direct it, Nick?
Well, I think that Sarah Rule, who of course is the writer of the piece, gave us just a wonderful script to work with. And the themes that she's approaching are just marvelous. It's really a topics and themes such as female sexuality, or we should say the lack of awareness of female sexuality in that time. Also the idea of breastfeeding and motherhood.
Right.
And then, of course, just this is layered then with that people were just not aware of female sexuality in those days, and that's how you get this farcical type of absurd situation where you have a doctor treating women and they're having orgasms, and he is basically talking about that they electrocuted an elephant today in Coney Island while he's administering this therapy. So it's this very absurd type situation.
Absurd indeed, and I as I was watching it, I thought, it's tricky to do a play like this and not get caught up on the apparent vulgarity of the basic premise.
Well, and there it is. I mean, I think there is where, when you say about how do you direct something like this, first the actors, in any comedy, drama, comedy especially, and a farce, the characters must play and touch into the depths of the emotion of the moments and play them in those realities, and then the farce plays itself out. If you run the risk of if the actors would go to two-dimensional type of acting or just playing it for laughs, it won't work. But if they truly get into it and reach those emotional depths and get involved, then it's actually funnier to the audience. So we've been working on this and approached it from that way. I wanted the actors to kind of understand and reach to the depths of what the characters are going through, and then we layer on all of the other elements to it. And you're playing an absurd situation. It's funny, and it's just so. It was been a lot of fun to work on as well.
The play is called In the Next Room, or The Vibrator Play, by Sarah Rule. And it opens tonight at the Armory for the Arts. It's presented by Santa Fe Performing Arts. And it's Fridays and Saturdays at 7 o'clock and then Sunday matinees at 2 o'clock this weekend, the next weekend, and the weekend after that. So you've got 9 chances to see this play.
Yeah, it's a limited run, 9 performances only. So we're looking forward to people coming in and seeing it, and I'm sure you'll get some yucks out of it. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, because this is not a classic farce, it's a contemporary farce, and Ms. Rule has done an excellent, I think, phenomenal job of bringing in issues that were relevant then and are equally relevant now. Certainly the play has been nominated, was nominated for 3 Tonys, and it is nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. So that will tell your audience a little bit about the material.
Lest you be wary of the of the subject matter.
Right.
And it's at the Armory for the Arts. Once again, the box office number over there is 984-1370. Nick Sabato, Sean Wayne King, and Megan Burns, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And we're back with Rob DeWalt, speaking of the arts. He's with the Friday, with Pasa Tiempo, the Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. Welcome.
Good morning.
And I forgot to say at the end of our session with Linda Siegel, the legislative update, as always, if you have any concerns about issues that are happening in the legislature, positive, negative, or whatever, call your legislators.
Yes. Crazy stuff going on down there.
Crazy stuff going on.
Busting. Yep. Busting. Never knew that you could bust a bill like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, blast.
Blast. Well, blast I call it. I call it. I call it bust.
Yep.
But that's another story. But I love
reading,
those updates.
I was reading the New Mexican, and Marcela Diaz says, this isn't about driver's license. This is about politics.
Yeah.
And these questions are not about fulfilling the governor's campaign promises.
No.
They're about making good decisions about what's best for the people of New Mexico.
And you know it's not about driver's licenses, and you know it's about politics when you see the way that people reacted on the floor when the bill got blasted, and then they wanted to call a recess, and everyone sort of cried like 3-year-olds. On both sides.
Interesting.
It's about politics.
It's about politics, but it's not about politics. It's about safety on the roads. It's about law enforcement.
Yep.
It's actually also about revenue. It's about, I think, $600,000 worth of revenue that comes in, not to mention insurance costs,
mm-hmm.
insurance bills that are paid by people who have driver's license. It's crazy.
I know. I mean, I know legal immigrants that drive and don't have driver's licenses. I know people that were born in this country that drive and don't have driver's licenses. Or
really?
Insurance. So.
Ay, ay, ay. I've been paying insurance since I was 18 years old.
Really?
Yep. I've never, ever not had driver's license and insurance.
Well, it's been the same for me. Since probably about 19 or 20, which is a lot of years.
Let's speak of the arts.
Let's speak of the arts. That's a lot happier thing to speak about than the legislature right now. Let's see. Yardi, I just heard about the In the Next Room, so that's covered.
Okay.
Let's see. Oh, this weekend is the 2011 Short Film Showcase, Women in Film and Television International Short Film Showcase, in conjunction with the 18 days events that are happening at CCA and whatnot. It's a 2-day film festival celebrating the 100th anniversary of International Women's Day, which I believe is the 8th of March, I think. Anyway, 7 p.m. tonight at the CCA, and then it also it continues on March 5th, Saturday, and they're going to be giving presenting the SAGE Award on Saturday. I believe
yes.
It's actually before the screening of the film. The schedule that the 18 days folks put out says it's after, but it's actually before. So
okay.
Get there about 6.
So just
6.
Show up for the whole thing.
Get there at about 6.
And there's a teen event.
There is a teen event, and unfortunately I don't have it in front of me, but there is a workshop for teens. Oh, actually, yes. Here, I have information on it right back
3 o'clock. New Mexico Women in Film panel discussion, teens meet with women in creative art. So if you're a teenager, and they're counting teenagers up to 25 years old, which I love, and they can basically meet with filmmakers and talk about what it means to be an actor, director, producer, to work in the film industry.
Right, and there's no charge for teens and women under the age of 25. There is a small charge for those who are over 25. You can call 982-1338 to find out more about that workshop.
And the showcase is Friday and Saturday at 7. And the panel is Saturday at 3. And then on Sunday, Poems and Stories. Lorraine Schechter, artist and poet, is doing an event called Growing Up Artist, a Self-Portrait. And that's at 6 o'clock on, I mean at 3 o'clock on Sunday the 6th.
Well, those are cool events. Everything has been fairly well attended thus far.
Yeah, they've done a great job.
And I have to tell you that I've seen all of the shorts in this series, and they're all really, really good.
Yeah.
Some are disturbing, some are hilarious.
There's one that's weird.
Which one? Is that the one with the nurse in
the
cornfield? Yeah. Yeah, that one's weird. Depressing and weird. But the one with the alien is pretty cool.
The first one with the aliens is good, and we interviewed Deborah Haywood about her film called Sis.
Yes.
Which is terrific.
Yes.
And Debriana Mancini has a short film in it, an animation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, based on the book.
About the cats.
Yeah, kitty.
Okay.
Hey, talking about something that's going to be well attended.
Yes, we have a ticket giveaway.
Exactly, with Randy Newman.
Randy Newman.
Oscar-winning songwriter. I think
a blast from your past, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly. He's going to be here in Santa Fe at the Lenzic on Monday, March 14th at 7:30. We have one pair of tickets to give away to the first caller, 4281382.
4281382. And
that's great.
What were some of his hits?
Short I People. Love LA.
What?
I Love LA.
I Love L.A. This
really?
Wasn't that a Randy Newman song?
I don't know.
He did, it's the guy's done, he did a bunch of songs, Princess and the Frog, wasn't that the name of that Disney film that came out last year, the 2D animated film? Anyway, he did a bunch of music for that, and he did, I don't know, there's an interview in next week's Pasa Tiempo by Bob Kerr.
Excellent.
With Mr. Newman.
All right.
What else is going on in town? There's just so much going on. I don't know where to start.
Let's start with Collected Works Bookstore.
Okay.
On Sunday, the 6th of March at 2 o'clock, Veronica Golos will read from her new book of poetry, Vocabulary of Silence, at Collected Works Bookstore. And she will be introduced by Santa Fe poet Dana Levin. And then on Tuesday, the 8th of March at Collected Works, award-winning actor Alan Arkin presents his memoir, An Improvised Life. And then on Thursday, the 10th at 6 o'clock, Wayne Muller is talking about his inspirational book, Life of Being, Having, Doing Enough. And all those events are free, and the store is at 202 Galisteo Street, 988-4226.
This sounds like something I could get on. On Saturday at 8:30 at Silver Starlight Lounge over there at Rainbow Vision on Rodeo Road, Songs to Offend Almost Everyone.
Mm.
It's a cabaret performance by Sharon McKnight at 8:30 p.m. There's a charge for that, and you can get ticket information by calling 428-7781.
Any songs by Mr. Hankey?
Hi, everybody.
This is also Sunday. This weekend is the beginning of Santa Fe Restaurant Week. There's been a lot of them.
Yes.
There's one in Cruces. There's one in Albuquerque. There's one in Taos. And it's our turn.
Restaurants offering discounts.
There's also some pretty cool sort of seminars and tastings. There's a sherry tasting and pairing at La Boca, excuse me. There is a sake seminar.
I love La Boca.
I love La Boca. And I know it's so close to the office, I find myself wandering in there way too much.
Yeah.
But Restaurant Week is through March 13th, and if you go to NewMexicoRestaurantWeek.com, you can get more details. Funny thing,
yes.
You know, this is a way for restaurants to kind of bring in new customers, and you know, there's some value to be had, but you gotta really shop around. My advice would be to look at ads for certain restaurants and look at their pre-fee prices, and then look at what their menus are and how much they are on the site, and then you can make more informed decisions.
Right, right.
Okay. Just wanted to throw that out there.
I got an email from Santa Fe Public Radio KSFR DJ David Barsanti,
mm-hmm.
talking about the South by Santa Fe Transit Music Festival.
Yes.
What do you know about that?
I know so much about it, it's not even funny. This is the second year. The first, it launched last year at Corzo Nightclub, and it was sort of their brainchild. Michael Baker, who's the owner over there. This year, they've mixed things up a little bit. They've gotten a lot of the promoters in town to get on board. They've gotten a few different venues to get on board. And they've expanded the all-ages opportunities, which is, I think, totally awesome. There's great bands. I mean, basically, unlike South by Southwest, which is a lot of the bands that are coming to the music festival in Santa Fe are either on their way there or coming back from South by Southwest.
By the way, the tickets are gone. Don't keep calling Mary Lynn.
Oh.
Randy Newman. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So, but the thing that's different about this particular music festival is that it really gives local bands a chance to shine too. It's not just a bunch of out of town acts. There's a lot of local talent that's on the bill. Wednesday night at Core Zone, Scott H. Byram, a.k.a. the Dirty Old One-Man Band, is going to be performing. This guy's crazy! And Ralph White, the singer-songwriter, is also going to be there. Little Wing, this is that first show was 21 and over. On Thursday the 10th, Little Wing at the Candyman presents Night Beats, which is a really cool sort of lo-fi garage psych rock outfit from Seattle.
Wait, can you just say that string of words again?
Lo-fi psych rock garage outfit from Seattle.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. And then also on March 10th, Paper Bird and Flamingo Pink, a.k.a. Megan Burns.
Yay!
They're going to be performing at that's at Core Zone also. And Nosotros is performing later that night. And here's the cool thing. I found this out when I went to Nosotros' homepage. They are sort of competing to get a slot at the 35th annual Telluride Jazz Celebration, which runs August 5th through the 7th. And you can vote for them. There's a judging panel that's narrowed it down to about 10 bands. If you go to nosotrosmusic.net, you can get instructions on how to vote for them, and you can vote more than once.
So, excellent.
So if you want to see Nosotros at the Telluride Jazz Celebration,
pack the ballot box.
Head over there. Yeah.
Cuba Next Exit, a cappella and scat Cuban music at the James A. Little Theater tonight. We had Ramon. We had Ramon Calderon and Solara on yesterday talking about all of that, and that's at the James A. Little Theater. Ramon has a he's a good musician, and he also has a really didactic thing. He just wants you to know what the different rhythms are and explain it all and then put it together. So there'll be some of that tonight.
Oh, like interspersed with performance?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Or performance interspersed with didacticism.
That would be the better way to go.
I think.
what else is going on? Let's see. Dead Dub Society on Saturday presents Absolute Dubstep. Dubstep is just all over the place now. I love these folks that are performing. 13 pieces, Welsh Embassy, Mute Swan, The Infector, The Knox Harrington Unit, and Bastard Mike. That's at 9 p.m. on Saturday over at Little Wing.
All right.
Yeah.
Michael Combs, joined by Eagle Star, father and daughter duo, sings country, folk, and gospel blues from 6 to 9, that's tomorrow, Saturday, at Upper Crust Pizza, no cover.
Cool.
He's always great fun. You know what he's done? He has researched so many songs, including Mexican songs, and kept them alive, saved them from dying, basically found songs that nobody sings anymore and give them a new life.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hearing interesting things about John Serkin, who plays Hawaiian slack guitar over at Epizote on Saturday nights at 6:30 p.m., no cover. But I also understand that he is a piano technician and he is a maker of camera obscuras.
Ah, nice.
So I'm going to hunt John down and I'm gonna talk to him because he sounds like a really interesting cat. 6:30 Saturday, slack key guitar at Epizote, which is also known to many people as Bird's La Taqueria.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Thank you
over
for that.
Over there on Agua Fria Street.
And Luminous, the work of Mayumi Nishida, is opening tonight at the 222 Shelby Street Gallery, and I bet you can figure out where that is. The reception is from 5 to 7 tonight.
Cool. I should also mention that Songs to Offend Almost Everyone repeats on Saturday at 8:30, so there's a repeat performance. If you want to be offended twice in a weekend, you can either come sit next to me, or you can go to these concerts.
Okay.
All right.
I bet they're not going to play the most offensive song ever written, though.
Can you sing it?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's by Mr. Hankey.
Oh, okay.
People can find it.
All right. Hey, this is important. Wiseful Community Spring Cabaret. This is their spring fundraiser. On Sunday, they're having two shows, 4 and 7 p.m., over at the Wiseful Studios on Agua Fria Street. acrobats, circus acts, stuff like that. There's a sliding scale, and there is a smaller price for kids under age 12. If you go to call 992-2588 for information on this, because I didn't see anything on their website. But I did confirm it. So it is happening on Sunday, okay. 4 and 7 p.m. So go to brunch, go to a show, go to dinner, go to a show. Support these guys. It's awesome. Eggman and Walrus Art Emporium on Monday. Experimental folk band Damon Moon and the Whispering Drifters are going to be performing at 7 o'clock.
That has a ring to it.
Yeah. And
the
Claudius.
Whispering Drifters.
Claudius is also going to be performing. And that's at 7 p.m. over there at Eggman and Walrus, which is the downtown gallery. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. And jazz, as good as it gets. Did you read this one already? Doug Lawrence, Dan Trudell, and Pete Amahl in concert Sunday the 6th of March at 7 o'clock. And that is at Santa Fe Performance Exchange at La Tienda, 7 Caliente Road in El Dorado. For more information, santafeperformanceexchange.org or 466-3116.
Right, that's on Sunday. And also on Sunday is the Santa Fe Community Orchestra. Their season continues with Mahler's Fifth Symphony at 2:30 p.m. at St. Francis Auditorium. So a free afternoon show over there at the St. Francis Auditorium.
Really nice.
That would be cool. National Philharmonic of Poland on Wednesday the 9th. Santa Fe Concert Association is presenting the orchestra at 7:30 p.m. at the Lenzik.
Do we know what they're playing?
I don't know what they're... I do not know what the repertoire... I just don't know.
Well, that's okay. I bet they're fabulous.
Yes.
And let's see, this Sunday from 1 to 3, afternoon tea, live music, and a story brought to you by the Pueblo de Abiquiú Library and Cultural Center in Abiquiú. Celebrate Women's History Month in March with performer Jerry Grebe and storyteller Marguerite Kearns, a program of music and story. For more information, 685-4884.
Here's a great show on Thursday that's opening at Launch Projects over there on Palace Avenue, Bologna Skin Babylon, work by the collective Tête DeVoe. This is just a really interesting arts collective, subversive to almost hilarity. There's a reception on Thursday from 6 to 7 p.m. The show's up through March 27th, and there's a story on page 36 in today's Boston Tempo.
Excellent. Now, here's some fun. Theater Work is converting the former Tino Griego pool building on Llano Street next to the Lafarge Library into a performance space for their upcoming production of Antigone by Jean Anouilh. And it's a big job clearing out the debris and cleaning it and all this stuff. And you know what they're going to do? On the inside of the pool, they're having poets write graffiti, which is actually their poetry, local poets, that is about the themes that are in this play. So here's the deal. They're looking for help because they want to get all this pool stuff done this weekend, March 5th and 6th, that's tomorrow and Sunday, from 10 a.m. on. Just go and help. All the help helps. Bring warm clothes. He puts layers because the heat isn't on yet. Gloves. A small face mask if you don't like gloves. Broom or shovel. And your friends. You have a look of consternation, Rob Duell.
And a sack lunch.
And a sack lunch.
Yeah.
And if you want to let them know if you're coming, you can write to thwork@theaterwork.org. Otherwise, just show up.
That actually does sound like fun.
It does sound like fun.
Hey, if we're speaking to the arts, we should probably speak about a few gallery openings, shouldn't
Please
we?
Please do, of course.
Manitou Galleries, Jennifer O'Qualane, I believe, and Steve Worthington. They're having a reception tonight over there at Manitou on Palace Avenue, 5 to 7:30 p.m. Santa Fe Clay, work by Stephen Godfrey and Andy Shaw. The Summer Workshop Preview Exhibit is opening. There's a reception from 5 to 7 p.m. tonight. That's through April 16th. Let's see. Arroyo Gallery on Delgado Street, Vast and Varied, Series 1, Southwestern Exposures. New work by Scott McLaren. There's a reception tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. That's through April 17th. There's also, on Saturday, Changing Gallery on Palace Avenue, We OK, Documentary Photographs of New Orleans, in conjunction with Mardi Gras, which is on Tuesday, I believe.
Tuesday already?
Fat Tuesday.
Wow.
Yeah, Fat Tuesday. I wonder if we should just call it Overweight Tuesday and just be nice.
Chubby Tuesday?
Chubby Tuesday. Rotund Tuesday.
Portly.
Portly. There's a Portly Tuesday
now. Big boned.
Yeah. So anyway, this show at Changing Gallery, there's a reception on Saturday from 4 to 8 p.m., and that's through March 27th.
And somebody named Love Jordina came in and let me know that she has a film that's screening at the CCA tonight at from 8:30 to 9:30. It's a screening of the movie Waves, and they're going to be raising film for the director's next film, Running Girl. So it's about a girl who is obsessed as she thinks about her soulmate.
Deep.
It's about passion and love and obsession and all those kinds of things. I haven't seen it, but
passion and obsession.
Exactly.
This is the best thing. I love this. The 23rd annual National Fiery Foods and Barbecue Show is over there at Sandia Casino. 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 4th, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday, March 5th, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, March 6th. If you go to Fiery Food Show, foodsshow.com, you can get more information. This is a really fun event.
Fiery Foods.
Fiery Foods.
You like Fiery Foods?
I do. You know, I didn't like spicy foods that much. And then
you're New Mexican, aren't you?
No, I'm Texan, baby. No, I'm a New Mexican. I've been here like a long time.
Since you were conceived.
Pretty much. But I went to college with this guy named Pete Kopetz. He was Polish. And he introduced me to really spicy foods. And I was hooked. From then on, I was totally hooked.
Can America's great public universities be saved? Speaker James Garland speaks on Saturday from 3 to 5 at Santa Fe Prep. He is a Santa Fe resident, and this is being sponsored by the Santa Fe Council on International Relations. And you can check them out at, let's see, well, you can give them a call at 982-4931.
So my brain's not working this morning. Did we mention the Books at the Market event?
Go ahead.
Okay. On Saturday, Collected Works Bookstore in Slow Food Santa Fe present Craig Kraft signing copies of Chasing Chili's Hot Spots Along the Pepper Trail. There's a review in Wednesday's taste section if you saved your paper, or you can see that online. That's from they'll be there from 9 a.m. to noon at the Santa Fe Farmers Market, I believe indoors at the Pavilion on Saturday. So
celebrate National Craft Month this March at the Bead Fest. The Bead Fest is coming back, and we'll talk about it more next weekend, but it actually starts on Thursday, so I thought I'd mention it. And where is it happening? Where's the Bead Fest happening? It says who, what, and when. Oh, the Hilton.
The Hilton.
Maybe it's a number of places. Go to beadfest.com, and you'll find out more.
A whole fest around beads.
I've been to Bead Fest a number of times. It's really fun.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe I should go once just to see what it's like.
Yeah, do you bead?
No.
I bead.
No, and it's I've never understood the fascination with it, but maybe if I go.
Well, you probably don't wear beaded necklaces, bracelets, and earrings.
No.
Nor do you give them as Christmas gifts to those you love and like.
No, I'm not that crafty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to be. I don't do it as much anymore, but I used to bead, and it's really fun. And just seeing them, it's its own artistic subculture. There's the coolest stuff that you see in those things. And the local bead stores have nice stuff. It's time to go, isn't it?
I think so.
I'm hearing the noise. I mean, the music. We've been talking to Rob DeWalt. Speaking of the arts, he's with the Positiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's with us every Friday. Speaking of the arts, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And
I won't be here next week.
You won't be here next week?
No.
We will miss you so.
Okay, I miss you too.
Who's going to be here?
I don't know.
Oh.
We'll
have to figure that out. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Our email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. And thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. After that, jazz a la carta. And thank you also to Hector for engineering today as well. Hasta la vista.
Bye.
Ciao.